So the interesting thing about major pharma is they've been traditionally very good at running clinical trials and then commercializing drugs. So if you give them a drug and they can test it and commercialize it very well. But the part that they've struggled with more is almost the first bit of getting the innovation to figure out which drug should even be tested.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological revolution. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders to government officials to leaders of advocacy groups. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical and equitable legislation. I'm very excited to have Rafael Townsend with us today. He's the founder and CEO of Atomic AI, a machine learning drug discovery company. He received his PhD from Stanford University. He was also a Forbes 30 Under 30. I invited him on this show as we want to have many different voices that can create practical legislation. And AI can have a revolutionary impact on drug discovery. So we thought it would be great to have Rafael with us today. Welcome, Rafael. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Rafael, our guests are basically members of Congress, staff, think tanks, industry leaders, advocacy leaders, people around the globe, EU, etc. Can you provide our listeners a brief overview of your company's approach to drug discovery using machine learning? A little bit about your background too, please.
Of course. So at a high level, my own background is really at the intersection of AI and biology. I did my PhD, as you mentioned, at Stanford University, really working at this intersection. I started actually working on self-driving cars and computer vision type applications, but then pretty rapidly pivoted to understanding the shapes and functions of molecules to be able to better design drugs to cure diseases with significant unmet medical need. In terms of what Atomic does, it was really a continuation of a lot of my PhD. At the end of it, we ended up publishing some work that was featured on the cover of Science around these AI approaches for understanding RNA and the shape and function of RNA. And that really leads to what a lot of how I describe Atomic, which is really that we're at the intersection of two of these big breakthroughs of the last decade. On the one hand, as I'm sure many of your viewers are familiar with, we have the AI sort of revolution, with technologies like ChatGPT demonstrating the power of these computational technology. But on the other, we also have the RNA revolution with, you know, things like the mRNA vaccines, saving us from the depths of the pandemic. And so Atomic is really combining these two revolutions together to create its own breakthrough at the intersection of RNA and AI. And really what we're doing is we're taking this R&D AI platform, these big AI model, foundation model, trained on in-house custom collected data of RNA to better design therapeutics that involve RNA. And so by doing so, we can open up these new directions for targeting RNA and going after diseases that were previously incurable.
Well, that's fantastic. So you've taken the best of AI and you've taken the best of the medical breakthrough that sort of saved us from COVID, which is the RNA. So that's fantastic. Rafael, how do you see artificial intelligence democratizing drug discovery? And what impact do you think it'll have on the pharmaceutical industry? Because as you know, there are all kinds of numbers. They say it takes $1 billion to produce a drug, and it takes 15 years with the phase one, phase two, phase three trials. So a handful of companies like Pfizer and some of these big companies can do it. Tell us about the impact that what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, the key is really trying to use these AI technologies to get to better drugs cheaper and faster. Right? That's really the takeaway. It gets better outcomes for patients in a more efficient manner. And the way you do that with a lot of the AI drug discovery approaches that we're building is you can use sort of computational techniques to replace a lot of the previously expensive sort of in the lab experimental techniques that you would use to search through potential drugs and find the ones that are more potent, more selective, less toxic, et cetera. And so if you can do that, you can essentially short circuit the path to getting to the clinic and go much faster to going through your FDA clinical trials. And then on top of that, if you're getting to higher quality medicines as well, you reduce the failure rate within the clinical trials as well. If you've got better drugs entering in with a higher probability of success, that reduces the cost of those trials. And part of the reason the entire process is so expensive, right? You say $1 billion to get a new drug, is because of that high failure rate. You know, it's very common to fail a phase two clinical trial. And so if the quality of the medicines you're bringing in there are increased, that also significantly reduces the overall burden there.
So, Rafael, for our listeners to understand who might not be biology experts, it's the quality of drugs that are coming into pipeline that is going to improve, reduce the failure rate. That's going to reduce the cost and the timeline also, because people say it takes 10 to 15 years for this clinical trial. So is that what you're trying to do?
So yes, you're reducing the failure rate in the clinical trials. You're also reducing the overall timeline for any given drug that you're developing. You know, there's a process when someone says it can take 10 years, that's including not only the clinical trial piece, right, which can take a significant amount of time, but the process by which you find a drug to run in the clinical trials too. That piece is called the drug discovery process versus the part in the clinical trial is called the drug development process. And so we can reduce the failure rate in the development process, the clinical trials, and we can dramatically reduce the time in the drug discovery process, thereby sort of really reducing that 10-year time span that it usually takes to find a new drug.
Well, that's fantastic. Rafael, can you share some success story or examples of how your technology has or will accelerate this process like you're talking about?
Yeah, so a big breakthrough that happened in the last few years is this technology called AlphaFold. It was named Breakthrough of the Year in Science Magazine in 2021, I would say. And this was actually the team at Google DeepMind that developed this highly accurate method of folding proteins. So it's given a protein, figure out the 3D shape it folds up into is very important to understand what it does. You know, it's almost too obvious in a way. It's like understanding the shape of a bike is important to telling you what it does. And if the wheels of the bike are in the wrong place, it's not going to do a very good job of bringing you around. And so very similarly, the shapes of molecules are very important to understanding what they do. And then when something's going wrong, understanding how to fix it. Now, the problem is finding the shapes of proteins or RNA or any other molecule through traditional means is very expensive. I'm talking, it can take years and it can take millions of dollars. In fact, a friend of mine, his entire PhD was solving the structure of a single protein using these traditional techniques. And so with AI, you can take this process that is extremely expensive and time consuming and reduce it down to a few seconds instead. So I'm talking going from years to seconds to find the structure of a given molecule. And once you do that, you can better understand what's going on and thereby design better drugs to modulate disease. And so that's been seen as this big success. Now, the catch is that the drug discovery process is a long one, right? Even a fast scenario is still multiple years. And so this breakthrough is recent enough that we haven't seen all the sort of downstream impacts of it. But there's every day now, there's more publications showing how much of a difference it's making in terms of our understanding of the biology and the diseases that we'd like to target.
Well, that's great for patients and consumers. Rafael, from a consumer standpoint, how does your company ensure transparency and accountability in the algorithms and the processes that you're using for drug discovery?
Now, it's a great question. At a high level, you don't want to just blindly trust the algorithms, right? The algorithms are making predictions and they can oftentimes be wrong. And so you still need to test the final predictions. You can search through a vast amount of potential sort of drug space using your algorithms and it'll make some suggestions, but you're not just going to take those suggestions on blind faith. You must test them. And so we not only provide that sort of transparency in terms of showing like what data we're training on and what predictions we're making, but as well providing, you know, very clear sort of validation of what the algorithms are outputting as well.
The question obviously that, and we've had a lot of guests that come in on the podcast that talk about how patient data is being mined, ingested by this AI. Tell us, how do you navigate the intellectual property concerns and ensure that the benefits of AI-driven drug discovery, which you're doing, are accessible to, you know, a large range of stakeholders, including patients and healthcare providers?
Yeah, and that's an ongoing discussion. And I'm not surprised that it's been one that a number of your past guests have also dived into. I would say there's a couple different angles to this. You want to make sure that the outputs of your algorithms are understandable to a wide swath, right? You're talking about healthcare practitioners, you're talking about patients. If you're integrating, you know, and this is speaking more beyond Atomic as well, but across AI for healthcare in general, you need to make sure that it's auditable, right? That you can understand where these predictions are coming from, what's informing those predictions. And you need to make sure that the people using these predictions deeply understand, you know, where this is coming from and are not misinterpreting that data. Because that's another major danger, is if you, for example, blindly trust the predictions of your AI algorithm without the right sanity checks on there, that can very much lead you astray. And so, speaking again from a broad industry perspective here, it's really about this process of education, of educating folks and making sure that they understand where these predictions are coming from and what they mean.
So educating the stakeholders towards this is very important, Rafael. Rafael, you talked about the industry. In what ways can the industry collaborate with regulatory agencies like FDA to, you know, ensure that compliance is there with existing regulations, but also, you know, foster innovation and AI-driven drug discovery?
Yes, in many ways, actually, you know, we're fortunate to benefit from a fairly well-regulated industry already in the drug discovery space. You have the FDA, and there's a very standardized set of clinical trials that any new drug molecule has to go through. And so from that standpoint, you're not short-circuiting that process. You still have to go through those same clinical trials, the same as everyone else. It's just the quality of what you're putting into that pipeline and the speed at which you're getting to the entrance of that pipeline is increased. And so in that way, right, we're not proposing to, you know, go beyond the FDA or anything. In fact, we, you know, they're a very important stakeholder at the table here. And a lot of the regulations that are in place are written in blood, frankly, of they're not being there before, and then major issues arising. And so in a lot of ways, those guardrails are already in place. And it's really about what are the drug molecules that we're going to run through the regulatory process that we're picking out. And so if you contrast that to other spaces in AI, which are much more almost the Wild West in some ways, there's relatively fewer sort of questions around regulation in the AI for drug discovery space, specifically because of the pre-existing regulations here.
So, Rafael, AI overall, but also the space that you are in, is moving so rapidly. Overall in AI, you know, changes almost today. Sora is there, you have multimodal agents, etc. But just the same thing in the drug discovery space. How can an agency like FDA keep up with these things? Because you need them also to be on the same page as you. If you said you want to get to speed faster, but they are the gatekeepers, rightly so, but they also need to be educated. So any thoughts on that?
Yes, no. A lot of it comes down to having the right dialogue with the right people at the table. It's impressive to me how many times, you know, there's just a disconnect between different parties that have very different viewpoints that can be resolved by, you know, sitting down and really trying to get at the heart of the matter. And so, for example, you know, I've seen from the AI for drug discovery space, you know, this is a slightly different example, but bringing AI scientists together with biologists, it's very different perspectives. But if you bring these folks together and talk it through, you can actually get a much better understanding of both the capabilities and limitations of these kinds of AI algorithms. And so very similarly, engaging with regulators can give the regulators a better sense of where you really need to be paying attention, where the potential dangers are. as well as, you know, the AI for drug discovery folks, a better understanding of where the regulators' concerns are coming from and making sure that they're addressing those front and center as well.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
So obviously they need to be educated towards what's coming down the pike. Rafael, how do you ensure the reliability and reproducibility of results generated by your AI-driven drug discovery platform, considering the complex nature of biological systems?
Yeah, so this comes back to one of the earlier points I was making, which is you really need to validate the predictions in the lab still. And so what we've built is not just an AI, but it's really an AI integrated in with a wet lab that can test what the AI is predicting and do that in a fairly tight cycle so that you can quickly feedback into the AI what is working and what is not, as well as retest examples that might be more questionable, right, if it was a bad experiment. And so in this way, you can really build not just an AI, but an AI with a lab in the loop and get at what we really see as the future of AI. And biotech is not just computational and not just biology, but the integration of AI and biology together.
So if it's the integration, then do you have collaboration and knowledge sharing within the broader scientific and AI communities? Do you see collaborations, and do you have any strategies so that you can advance drug discovery efforts faster?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed field out there, to be perfectly honest. In drug discovery, intellectual property is a major piece of the value. And so a lot of companies try and approach it by keeping everything as a trade secret or not publishing a lot of what they're pushing forward. This sort of comes into a clash with a lot of the more what I describe as tech perspective, which likes to be much more open and upfront about what's going on. And so we've tried to straddle that line and in fact publish the material, put out the material that we think will be beneficial to the broader field without, you know, single-handedly giving away what the biotech community would perceive as a critical sort of trade secret aspect. And so as an example, we recently put out a publication for an RNA foundation model that we released at the end of last year called ADAM1, which really demonstrated a lot of the potential power of this for the broader biotech and pharmaceutical communities. And I think that kind of dual approach of being considerate about what intellectual property you're keeping internally versus what can be shared and help advance the broader field is the right way to do this.
So balancing both, Rafael, is what you're saying. Yeah. Do you engage with patient advocacy groups and healthcare professionals when to try to ensure some of your drug discovery efforts are aligned with patient needs?
So we definitely are engaging at a broad level with where there's significant unmet medical need. In terms of engaging with specific patient advocacy groups, at this stage, we're a bit early stage to really be doing that in a very complete type of way. But our interests are very much in addressing unmet medical need. And so you can get that, you can pull sort of significant reports of where there are diseases that are lacking in terms of treatments. And we're really trying to push forward and design drugs that are not only minor improvements on what came before, but are also able to address and significantly improve, you know, patients' lives.
So Rafael, one of the big concerns, and a lot of our guests have talked about when they come in, is data privacy and security. When one works with sensitive medical and pharmaceutical data, especially in AI algorithms, any thoughts on how industry can address this?
Yeah, especially when dealing with patient data. And again, this is, I think, a broader industry comment.
Right.
You have to be very careful. You know, there's existing regulations there, like HIPAA, for example. And you have to make sure that you're engaging with the appropriate regulations here when pushing forward. But on top of that, there's specific technological advances you can leverage to help in this case, right? You can, first of all, help anonymize parts of this data and use these AI approaches known as, for example, federated learning to selectively grant access to the underlying data in a way that isn't compromising privacy. And on top of that, I mean, on the security side of things, there's obvious benefits there. But on top of that, you really need to implement sort of the appropriate security protocols. And that is something that we already do at this time to really ensure that we're not suffering from any sort of unintended data leaks as well to external parties.
So anonymizing data and also making sure that there is enough security in the data, that those would be the important things. From a access and use standpoint, for a lot of diverse users with varying levels of technical expertise, any steps that the industry should be taking? Because, you know, the people have different levels of technical expertise. Everybody is not an AI expert. So as AI gets more integrated into health systems, what steps should be taken?
Clear documentation as to the outputs of the AI algorithms and in what conditions we expect it to work versus where we do not expect it to give useful answers, and then how to confirm or how that those outputs should be validated is another very key aspect. Because most people obviously are not AI experts, as you say. And so you really need, and I keep coming back to this point, the appropriate education of the users before this can be used appropriately. On top of that, you can put in some amount of guardrails around the AI approaches themselves. And this is our responsibility, such as Atomic and others, of putting in those guardrails in the first place. And a key way of doing that is, instead of, you know, giving folks direct access to the AI models, it's instead providing the outputs of the AI models and clear explanations of what they mean. Because if you provide the AI model directly, there's a lot more potential for misunderstanding and misuse of those models versus if you're just dealing with the outputs, that's a more constrained environment that is more easily controllable.
Rafael, you talked several times about educating the users. Whose responsibility is it? How do we educate the users? Because that's a very important topic that keeps coming up through many guests.
Yes, in some ways, a significant part of that responsibility falls to the folks that are building these tools in the first place, right? So I would include Atomic within that. But I also say that from a fairly self-interested perspective as well, right? The more you can educate folks as to the utility of these kinds of tools, the more you can drive their adoption, their use. And in some ways, therefore, I see there's very much an alignment of objectives here, which is you really want folks to understand what these things can and cannot do. If that's the most effective way that you're going to actually leverage these tools for people's benefit. It serves no one for a user to misuse a tool and cause issues down the line. That would just be bad press for the company, problematic for the users, lead to, you know, further distrust of AI as a whole.
Yeah. So you're saying it's basically on the company like an Atomic and on the user themselves too, right?
Yes, it's on the users as well, obviously. And there's no doubt about that. As we're starting to talk about, you know, AI regulation as well in terms of what should be enforced and required of the companies and the users, it certainly seems like there's room there as well for regulating sort of the use of these tools specifically.
So, you know, you talked about potential interface with the FDA. As, you know, AI is working more in terms of drug discovery, how about global regulators outside the U.S.? How do you see those challenges? Because are they going to be up to speed? Because, you know, people are not going to just market, well, maybe the U.S., but it could be the EU, it could be UK, it could be other parts of the world. So any thoughts on how we can probably get some kind of uniformity?
Right. So there is a patchwork of regulators across the globe, right? We wouldn't be able to, you know, if we got approval from the FDA to market our drug in the United States, that wouldn't mean that we automatically had approval to do so in, say, Europe. We'd have to go through Europe's equivalent of the FDA, the EMA, instead to really get those approvals. And there's no denying that's a whole separate process at this point. This is a challenge that all drug discovery companies face. It's how do we market and develop drugs across different countries. Now, when you throw AI into the mix, that further complicates the picture because now there's also separate AI regulation that's coming into play. And certainly having a unified approach there could be very beneficial in terms of understanding how and when we should be deploying these types of AI algorithms. Now, I'm a firm believer that really what you should be doing is regulating the outputs of these algorithms as opposed to the development themselves of these tools. I can get into that further as needed, but it's really, that's an easier place to regulate in many ways and leads, I think, to an ability to treat these things a bit more uniformly as well.
Give us a little more detail, because our podcast is regulating AI. Our listeners are members of Congress and Senate and their staff in many ways. So tell them a little bit about what you are saying is regulate the output. They're anxious to know.
The way that I like to think about this, and this might be borrowing a little bit from Andrew Ng, who I worked with in the past as a TA back at Stanford, it's AI fundamentally is a tool. It's a hammer, right, that can do different things. And really, I think it's such a fundamental piece of technology that regulating it itself, for example, in the drug discovery space, would probably mainly stifle innovation, is my sense there. Versus if you regulate instead of how it's used, for example, prohibit its use for designing a bioweapon, as an example here, that's just a much more productive way forward. Like an analogy would be trying to regulate electricity or something. It's like the fundamental technology has a lot of positives and potential negatives there. And it's more about like making sure you're clamping down on those negatives as opposed to trying to throw out the entire technology together. And so, for example, there's been these regulations around training these big AI models for on biological sequences and saying, oh, if you train on above this amount of, if you use it more than this number of floating point operations, then you have to report it to the US government. And let me tell you that there are certain applications where you would need far less than that to be problematic. And there are certain where you need far more than that to have anything problematic happen. And really, even in those cases, like take the example of designing a bioweapon, the part that the AI addresses is just one very small piece of the puzzle and does not make the overall process of developing a bioweapon significantly easier by any means. And so maybe the broader point that I'm making here is like AI is a tool, and it's really about how you use that tool more than anything that it really people should be paying attention to.
So AI is a tool, and you know the output and should be the one that we should be really concerned about. Rafael, how does Big Pharma look at folks like you? Because you know they've had this 6, 7, 8, 10, whatever companies. How do they look at folks like you who are truly trying to disrupt everything that they stand for?
It's actually fairly interesting. From their perspective, they actually see this as synergistic, a bit of a symbiosis, I suppose.
Really?
Yes. So the interesting thing about major pharma is they've been traditionally very good at running clinical trials and then commercializing drugs. So if you give them a drug and they can test it and commercialize it very well. But the part that they've struggled with more is almost the first bit of getting the innovation to figure out which drug should even be tested. And there's almost been this recognition that they've outsourced the innovation to biotech, such as Atomic AI. They're using these new kind of technologies to find these new drug molecules, right? Because as I was saying, once you found the molecule, it's a very standard process of going through the FDA and getting it approved. And that piece is relatively stable. We're actually not, or Atomic at least, is not trying to disrupt that piece of the puzzle. And so, you know, a major pharmaceutical looks at a company like Atomic and says, hey, this is a company that can generate new drugs for us to test. We can license that from them. We can buy them if they're really successful. It's not until later when such a company becomes very successful and starts becoming a competitor in terms of developing, commercializing their own drugs that they start becoming more concerned. And that's certainly a risk, obviously, but it's definitely not a strict negative from them. And they see a lot of these new biotechs as actually a very positive source of innovation.
So they're thinking, hey, this is another way, maybe these are an R&D, outsource R&D for us in some ways.
Exactly, exactly. And if it works, then they license it. You know, like the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine is a classic example of this. BioNTech developed the initial vaccine, Pfizer licensed it and developed it.
And rest is history.
Exactly.
That's true. Well, we'll see what amazing things come out there. Rafael, you've been very, very kind with so many different perspectives and some of the amazing things you're doing. I've told you about our audience. Some final remarks for our audience, because everybody says healthcare is the most important frontier for AI. Drug discovery. I've had members of Congress coming in saying that, hey, how we look at cancer in the next 5 years is going to be very, very different. And you are sitting right at the cusp. So tell our audience some whatever your final thoughts, words are for us.
I certainly agree with a lot of that sentiment. I think AI is really poised to disrupt a lot of the process by which we're finding these drugs and finding new medicines to really improve and save patients' lives. And we want to be very considerate about how we regulate this kind of thing. We should regulate the specific uses of these applications. Obviously, no one wants to develop a bioweapon, or at least certainly I hope most people don't want to do that. But, you know, if you start putting clamps down on the fundamental technology itself, that will also slow down our ability to get to those life-saving medicines. And so, like many other technologies, I think a very considerate sort of thoughtful approach and a balanced approach to this regulation is very much warranted.
A thoughtful and balanced approach, because some amazing things will come out. So we need to be careful that we don't throw the baby with the bathwater. Rafael, this has been so great. Thank you so much. There were so many other questions that I wanted to ask, but maybe we'll have you back again. So thank you for being such a wonderful guest on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.